Welcome back to another episode, probably episode two of Golden Bowl for 2026. Today I'm here with a phenomenal Laureate commentator, Tanner. Tanner, say what's up to the pod. You haven't been on in a while.
Yeah, I was on to end last semester, so it's good to be back now.
Yeah, but we've been taking a little bit of a break, especially from after last week. That was the first episode 26. It's like the first one since late November. A lot to talk about, especially when it comes to Laureate sports and big news. The big dome is finally up over Knight Newbrough Field. What do you feel about that?
Have you been to the dome yet?
I've not. Like, I saw the post, and I'm like, I should go check that out, but
I went to go check it out yesterday morning. It was pretty nice. It's like the whole field, there are a bunch of people there to kind of celebrate its opening. But I'm excited. You get a lot of the athletes out there practicing. You get to see some of the football players there. It's nice to see everything that's going on.
Yeah, I feel like for a dome, especially for Laureate, and like in this part of Waterloo, it should be mad important, really, if you think about it. Yeah. Like, Toronto has it, like the Varsity Dome. I've been inside that. That's a nice dome, and especially with the weather here, to get an indoor facility like that should be beneficial for the team, especially after all the seismic changes that have happened here.
Yeah, losing the head coach is definitely going to be a big deal for our football team. I don't know how we're going to bounce back from that.
Yeah, like, it was more positive. Like, Frankie was on the show last week. I don't know if that one's out yet, but he seemed like, him and Owen seemed pretty positive, especially with Coach Todd Galloway coming up to from the OC role, the head coaching role. We see that a lot in football. But there seemed to be some positivity from them, at least, because it's still going to be a talented team, and they now have better facilities to facilitate that. But, yeah, losing a coach like Michael Faulds to a team like Western, out of all schools, Western, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, I can't blame him for going back. I know he's a Western alumni, but it just sucks to lose him after a season like that where we were so close, kind of just fumbled it at the end there in the last game after going undefeated. Hopefully next season starts off well as too, though.
Yeah, last season, say it was a little more than a fumble, maybe a few interceptions, but, you know, that's football. It is what it is. It happens. At least Queens didn't win at all. That would have been really painful, but let's take a little move on. Football, it's not really the season for that. This is the season for basketball. That's kind of why you're here, because you know basketball, especially Laureate ball. And what are your thoughts on the men's team?
This season's been rough. They've had some ups and downs. If we want to make it to the playoffs, we're going to have to win out our last couple games, and they're against some really tough teams. It's not going to be easy for this Laureate squad. But Ethan Passley's back from injury. He was out for the last game of last semester. That really hurt the team down that stretch. But him being back, he's a floor facilitator. He really drives the entire offense. I think we can get some big wins here.
Yeah, that kind of started like yesterday or my last weekend against Waterloo. It was an 88-81 win in Waterloo. It's always big to beat Waterloo. But Waterloo isn't, you know, the cream of the crop type team, yeah, especially this season, 5-11. They're not the best of teams. And I think they missed some major opportunities. They've blown some big leagues. Like, I was there for the Western game. I was calling that game. They were up 20 in the third quarter. Like, I said it last week, I'm going to say it again. That one hurt.
They've had a lot of games like that this season. Just, like, they'll dominate the first half, and then the third quarter, kind of doing all right, up big, and then the fourth quarter, it just all crumbles apart, and they lose the game.
Yeah, especially like that game. When they came back, they went down 7 late, then they came back, forced overtime. And it feels like they're not consistent one bit. Like, you watched games like against TMU, against Western. They're good teams. They're nationally ranked teams with national acclaim right now. And they can compete with them, but they can't compete for four quarters, because I feel like their game plan is just chuck a bunch of threes. And there isn't much of, you know, going away from that, making adjustments. Like, Coach Calhoun is a good coach. I'm not going to knock on him. I like how he fires up his boys. He gets everyone going. But I feel like there needs to be more adjustments. This is a young team, but maybe a little bit divergence away from the game plan, especially when things start getting away from him.
Well, yeah, I think, like, going towards the fourth quarters, the problem is we're leading so much. And when you're in the lead in basketball, you don't know what adjustments to make because everything you're working is going right. But the team that's behind, they know everything that's going on. So they know, oh, we need to adjust our game plan. We need to try and shoot more threes, or we need to look for more mid-ranges, or try and get to the line, try and shoot more free throws. And then adjusting, Laurier needs to work on adjusting to those adjustments in the fourth quarter when there's not that much time left. And that's where they've really struggled this season.
Yeah, it's almost like the game of chess, right? Like, yeah. You see, you might be out, you might be out in front, you might be winning, but once the tactical adjustments, they start falling against Laurier, it feels like they're crumbling, they're falling apart. And for the fans of this team that are used to, you know, past years of success, this season's been painful to watch, and especially as commentators and fans, this one just has not been fun for Laurier men's basketball.
Yeah, I think it's next season is also going to be rough. We have some key guys that are, like, coming up to the end of their time here at Laurier. I think Aiden Whalen is a fifth year.
He's up there in how much eligibility he has
left.
Yeah,
same with Ethan Pasley and a lot of those guys that are really driving the team on offense and defense. And also just big locker room guys. You can see them, like, when they're on the bench getting the boys fired up and getting ready to try and make those big plays when they come back on.
Yeah, it's going to be a bit of a retool type of time for Laurier, especially for the back end of this decade. Kind of want to see what they can do in the next 2-3 years, especially maybe rebuild through recruiting. But another basketball team, we'll talk about Laurier, the women's basketball team, they have just not been to the standard that Laurier Sports has kind of set for 2025-26. They're 4-12. Half their wins are against Algoma. And if you know anything about the Algoma basketball program, it is a mess. The women's team's 0-16. The men's team just picked up their first two wins of the season. They have two wins, like 2-30 on the season, and half our wins are against them. So yeah. What do we think about the women's team? It's just not been the season.
Just nothing's been working for them. They've had some nice moments, but they're getting out-hustled to every ball. They're getting outshot. Their defense just isn't up to par. They aren't able to make any of the shots that they need to make. It's been rough to watch all around. I think Kira Aikman on the women's team, she's a fun player to watch, but you can notice it when they're asking her to guard the best player on the opposing team every single game, and then they're also trying to get her to go and score 20 points and also try and rebound 15 times, and it's just not humanly possible. They need to try and build around her and get her some girls that can try and take some of that pressure off her on offense and defense.
Yeah, you really talk about that point. It's really like one-person system they're running down for that women's team. It just hasn't worked. Like, if you take out the first weekend, this team is sitting really at Algoma levels, which is not what we really want to be at. It's Algoma basketball levels. But the season really, it's coming to a close. You can really say that it's practically over. Western, Windsor, McMaster coming up next, then U of T. It's not looking good. What do you think is the, you said to build around Sarah Aikman, I believe you said.
Kira Aikman.
Yeah, Kira Aikman. And what is the next step you think for this Laurier team, other than really building around?
I think they need to get more time in together and keep gelling as a team. Like, there's been a lot of moments where the chemistry just doesn't seem there. They're throwing passes into the bleachers. And it just feels like, even as a commentator, I could have caught some of those passes way up there. But I think this season is a real learning moment for this team. Trying to figure out what's going to work, what's not going to work down the stretch, because she's only a second year. And there's some other girls on that team that have shown some promise, like Tina Erazzo. She's had some big moments this year. But I think just trying to work on that chemistry, and then even the coach just getting used to these players. They're still pretty new to the team. And really, it can only go up from here.
Surely. Like, one would hope that, like, this season you could really, like, look at it. Like, I don't think they're winning 5 games. Like, it's going to be a struggle to win the 5th game. And you can't go much further down than where they are right now. But the kind of pivot 180, like, we've been just crapping all over Laurier Sports right now. Let's pivot towards hockey. The women's hockey team, they played this morning. What a thriller in overtime school day game against U of T. 2-1 win. Sarah Howell is outstanding again. They sit just comfortably at the top of the OUA West, 18-3. What are you liking about that women's hockey team for Laurier?
Obviously, their goaltending is elite. They have some of the best goaltending in Canada. But I think a big part of that is those goalies know that anyone on the team from lines 1-3 on defense, lines 1-4 on offense, they all have the ability to get the puck in the net and make big plays. So the goalie doesn't have to be worried about like shots coming in like every period of every second. And they can kind of take a little bit of a step back and rest and compose themselves while they wait for the other team to get a chance on offense.
Yeah, like the goaltending is being elite. Like Sarah Howell, Kayla Renaud, they've just been like Sarah Howell today. I was watching the game and it's 1-1 in overtime and there's a pass right across the ice. This is a golden goal opportunity for Toronto, U of T. And Sarah Howell just lays out pad save to keep the game alive. It's just, she has probably one of the easier jobs goaltending in the OUA. She has probably the best D core, best forward core, but she still is clutch.
Yeah.
Sarah Howell, like, she has like a 980 save percentage. That's this deep into the season. That's unheard of. That's simply
it's a little
put,
bit ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Like, you, like, if I don't remember the last time she's allowed more than one goal. And, like, I was commentating a game, and you do research for these games prehand, before the game, and you look at her stats, she has the same amount of shutouts as goals allowed. And I'm like, she's just been ridiculous. And when Kayla Renaud, she's like a 950, around that, but I think 940-something. If she's your number two, the team is doing something right.
Yeah.
The only problem is I wish they scored a little bit more. They still lead the league in goals per game, which is OUA women's hockey isn't the most high-scoring of leagues. They still lead, but sometimes they do play with their food a little bit, I see. Yeah. Like, it's a lot of 2-1, 1-0 games, very low-scoring, close games. But they have the talent to pull away. And I think they're, in my opinion, they're the favorite for the Macaw Cup come playoff time.
Oh, 100%. Watching how, it's a lot like watching, like, 2021 Vasilevsky, where just everything's clicking with the team, and then you just have a world-class goalie who can stop anything at any moment. Like, the puck's just not going in the net no matter what you do.
No, like, the only way you can really beat this team, which you really can't often, because if you watch a lot of their games, the defense, everything's to the outside. There's nothing really high. She faces one or two high danger chances. It cleans them up. It's just so impressive to watch that team and how good they are and, like, how efficient. Sometimes in the third period when they're playing, like, maybe, like, not the best of teams, like the Brocks, the Yorks of the OUA, it gets boring because you know the outcome.
Yeah.
Like, it's gone to that point where you know the outcome, what's going to happen, and it's a Laurier win.
Yeah, no. It's definitely nice to see one of our sports teams. Well, both of the hockey teams are actually doing pretty good right now, but it's nice to definitely see our hockey teams do well. And honestly, this women's team, I could see them, like, personally, I believe the women's D1 program in the States, those teams are a lot better than our school's teams. But I feel like they could compete with some of the best in the world for university or college-level sports.
Oh, 100%. Like, they look like they're playing a different game than what some of the other teams in the OUA are playing, especially on the women's side. Like, it is four lines, as you said, four lines of forwards, three pairing of defense, and two goalies that are at the highest level. And yeah, they can probably go out down south NCAA and play a few games there and probably hold up pretty well. To kind of pivot from maybe a really dominant team in the women's to a team that, on paper, the men's team should be really good. They are fast. They have the talent. They have the goaltending. They have all the things the women team has, but I feel like they're lacking something, but I just can't put my finger on it. They started the season 6-0. Then for the rest of the season, they've basically been middling around 500. Really, like, they're about 10-8 now, or 10-9, or 11. Like, they've just been mid as of late, and that's so unfortunate because you watch this team play. They're entertaining. All other games are really entertaining because they're physical. They will lay the body. They have a lot of guys like Kai Stothers, even Max Antoine Melisson. Like, he can put a hit in or two, even though he's an elite goal scorer. But, like, I'm just failing to understand, like, they're in probably the closest playoff races in the OUA, in the OUA West, and they seem way more talented than what they're showing for right now.
I think it's just such a tough division, and all these teams want it, but there's some nights where it just feels like the other team wants it a little bit more, and they're able to get in front of the net, make it dirty, and get some nice rebound opportunities against our goalies. And pucks just kind of aren't bouncing our way when we need them to.
Yeah, you can really say that because, like, Andrew Ness is one of the best goalies in the OUA. And it's stat-wise, he faces sometimes, especially as of late. I don't know what's happening with the Laurier team, but they're giving up 40, 50 shots a night. It doesn't feel like it sometimes. Like, it feels like a lot of these shots are not really super high danger, but they wear out a goalie after, like, by the third period. And that's when the Golden Hawks, they're losing a lot of these games in late third period overtime. I remember I was on the Lakehead game. It was, like, the last game of a three-game series between the teams. It was highly physical. It was a fast game. Both teams, I thought we were going to see a fight. Like, even pregame, they're just jawing at each other pregame. And Laurier is up 2-1. And late in the third, because Lake has just been passed, like, it was Tristan Malbeuf in net. They've just been pelting pucks on net, and they finally break it. And then overtime, they finally score, they win again. And it feels like games like that where you kind of have to win, especially with Lakehead, who's second in the division, you kind of got to win those games, and it feels like they're just not winning them right now.
Yeah. That's a when you're going up against goalies that they're kind of just stopping everything, you got to get physical, get up in front of them, and make sure that they're not seeing those pucks easy, and you try and get some dirty chances. It might not be a nice goal, might not be a highlight reel goal, but just try and get it dirty and get those pucks in the net when you can.
Yeah, speaking of pucks in the net, there's a few players on Laurier's team. Like Bryce Sutherland, he's one of the fastest players you're going to see on the ice. He just has a trouble finishing. Like, you see him 2-3 times on a breakaway chance, and he will just sky. He tries to be too perfect, I think, in my opinion. And if he gets shots on net, I think he can be one of the best players in the OUA. Or, like, he tries to really simplify his game. I think he overthinks when he gets into those breakaway chances, and it just breaks down for him. But I think the men's team, if they can close out the season well, I think they're dangerous in the playoffs. I truly do think.
100%.
Because they do have the talent. They have the goaltending. And if Andrew Ness gets hot, like, really hot during the playoffs, this is a team that we could probably think about both hockey teams make it a deep playoff run.
Yeah. Definitely exciting if you're a hockey fan and you go to Laurier. But I think they're just a fun team to watch. Like, I wouldn't say there's games that I've watched with them where I'm like, oh, this is boring. Like, I'm done right now. Even when we're losing, it's very competitive.
Oh, yeah. The whole UA has been, like, especially hockey on the hockey side, has been really competitive. Unless you're playing Laurier Women's and you're not a good team. Like, those are shellings. But to really pivot, like, we were talking a little bit before, we're both not Maple Leaf fans, which is kind of hard to come by. When, like, especially this part, like, two non-Leaf fans, but we're talking about the Leafs and what a dumpster fire they are. They have just been, like, Steve Dangle is going to have a heart attack by game 82, and there's calls for, like, maybe the first time in maybe 10 years, there's calls to sell at the deadline. Like, we're both on the outside looking and, like, what are we seeing here?
It's, if you're a Leafs fan, first off, you're yelling at Mitch Marner. How dare he leave the Leafs?
How dare he leave the team that, like, and the fans that wanted him dead half the time in the playoffs?
Yeah, but it's hard to find something to look forward to on this Leafs team. Matthews hasn't been playing up to par. Willie's kind of been the best outlook for this team, and even he's not had the greatest season. I wouldn't say panic sell everything and rebuild. That's not what I would recommend. But it's definitely time for retooling. Some of these guys have to go. First off, I think bringing in Brad Treliving as a GM was the craziest move.
Oh, that guy, that's probably, like, the one move. I'm praying on the Leafs' downfall every day. And it was like, whoa, they really just brought in the guy that built the Panthers dynasty when he was the GM of Calgary. Because that Huberto trade's horrible. And the Flames are who they are today, like a middling team that's needed a rebuild because of Brad Treliving. And I understand, like, you might need to move on from Dubas, but he's done well. Like, the Penguins are a good team with not, like, an old roster.
Yeah.
He's done well there. And Treliving has just regressed with a better coach. Rube is a better coach than Keefe, even though his system might be more defensive, but he gets more out of the guys in the playoffs. But it's just the Leafs are boring and they're not good. It feels like I'm watching the Islanders from a few years ago.
Yeah, when they were just running that defense, the trap defense, and getting like 20 shots on net a game.
It's just, it's brutal. like, especially for, like, who's, like, what are you going to look forward to in Toronto? It's not like there's young prospects, really. Like, they traded away Fraser Minton, I'm pretty sure, within the Carlo trade. He's good now. And that, like,
it happens to every Leafs player. They leave Toronto, and then all of a sudden they're an all-star.
Yeah, like, you could have used a guy like Zach Hyman, could have been a good use for the Leafs right now. Like, there's so many players that were former Leafs, and they're just good wherever they go now. And it's been unfortunate for a team like Toronto. They sit at the bottom of the Atlantic Division. Who would have thought Buffalo would have been better than the Leafs at the start of the season? It's just not been fun. It's not like the Atlantic Division is probably, like, I don't see, like, really one number one team. Like, it's a bunch of good teams. Yeah. There's nothing that, like, stands out like the Central Division. We have Colorado, Dallas, Minnesota. Like, those are the really good teams up there. Mm. It's still a wide-open division. And Toronto, like, in the past years, they'd be up there in the top. They'd be fighting. And where's the fight? Like, everyone's on IR. Everyone is just not good. Like, there needs to be a change somewhere. Treliving needs to go. Berube's definitely gone. Like, I have no clue where you go from Toronto. I have no clue.
I know a lot of Leafs fans try to hype up Matthew Nyes. I think he has some good moments, but the hype that they're giving him, he's just not that. He's not an all-star player. He's a good player. I think he can provide some value for the team, but the level that they're trying to bring him up to, he's not there. And they're going to have to make a big move at the deadline. I don't know who goes, maybe Oliver Ekman-Larsson, because the decor sucks. The forwards suck. The goalies are all right. They have their moments sometimes. But it's, again, tough for them when Morgan Riley is just standing there watching guys skate around him.
I never understood the Riley contract. I understand he's been, you know, that, like, Leaf defender. He's been, like, the longest-term Leaf. Like, he's been with the team forever, it feels like. But, like, he's not a guy you kind of got to keep around. Like, him, like, Tavares might be, you can move Tavares to the deadline, that contract. Like, I don't know if you can. I don't know if you, like, especially with a guy like Tavares, like, he's so loyal to Toronto.
Yeah.
You got to keep a guy like that around, but that contract's pretty movable. Like, he's cheap.
Yeah.
You can get a good return for a guy like that, especially with, he's got some decent playoff. He's an older guy, got some veteran presence. He could work on a team like that. But it's just, you know, there used to be sunshine and rainbows in Toronto for this time of year. It's not like they can't turn around. Berube's turned around bad teams before. But this isn't a team that has fight. Like, historically, Matthews doesn't have fight.
No.
Nylander doesn't have fight. Tavares sometimes has fight. Nyes has fight, but, like, Riley doesn't.
No.
It's just a lot more bad than good. But, like, I kind of want to talk about, you're a Canadiens fan. I haven't really talked to Canadiens. There hasn't had a Canadiens fan on this. Like, what are your thoughts? I know they're a young, good team. You have goaltending issues.
Yep.
There's major problems there. I thought, what's his name? He's really French sounding.
Caden Primo?
Not Primo, the other one that's...
Montembeau?
Sam Montembeau. I thought he was going to be the future for Canadian goaltending. No, he's not the future for Canadian goaltending. No. So what do you think's happening? Like they're in a playoff race, but yikes.
Goaltending's definitely been an issue. Fowler, he was hyped up a lot coming out of NCAA. He's had some nice moments, but I feel like offensively our defense is really good, but we give up a lot of shots, a lot of clean shots, and we're not making it hard for them, like, coming inside, and it's just been, like, the goalies have just been Swiss cheese. They just let in everything they see, and, like, every game I'm watching, it's ending, like, 5-5, 5-4. Like, it's just... You shouldn't be seeing these goal lines in the NHL.
No, it's like unsustainable hockey. Like, there's a lot of young talent on that team, but there's nothing behind them.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of need goaltending for a playoff push. And I don't know if the Canadiens can address that at this deadline. Like, I don't know what goalie is really up for grabs this deadline. Like, much of middling team, maybe like a Thatcher Demko from the Canucks, but.
I could see that.
I could, but, like, maybe a Jordan Bennington from St. Louis, like, one of those guys, like, on bad teams. Maybe if you throw him in front of, in the Canadian fire pool, Like, Montreal is going to be ruthless to whoever comes up there.
Yeah, they're even worse than Toronto fans. That media, they're insane.
Yeah, like, it's... How do you play in Montreal and Toronto? Like, every small move you do, every small thing you do is just... It's going to be criticized. And I think it's going to be a good year for the NHL because, like, there's only, like, one or two teams that I can really point to that are like, yeah, you're really good. Like, every other team is so mid. It's so... Like, the Pacific Division is trash.
Yeah.
There's no way of putting it around. It's just garbage. If Vegas has been a mid team and they're first, 63 points. That's disgusting.
Yeah.
But, like, other than Colorado, who's... Colorado slowed down as of late, and, like, the Wild and the Stars are teams I really like. And kind of, you can say Tampa and Florida, but they're always going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You can't count them out, but, like, there really hasn't been a team other than really Colorado that's like, yeah, they're a cup team. Like, the East has been a mess.
Oh, yeah. You lose one game in the East, you can go down to, like, seventh in your division. It's insane how close the race is. But I think the teams, it's going to be a very competitive playoffs. It's going to come down just to who can stay healthy at this point. Like, if one of these star players, if any of the top six forwards go down on any of these teams, their season's pretty much over. Like, they're not going to be making a deep playoff push just because of how competitive it is. But I think Florida is going to have a great chance just because of how physical they are. And in the playoffs, that kind of hockey works well. And then Colorado's really good. And Dallas, I think, has a chance if they can pull it together. It's just a matter of who's going to be able to get hot at the right time.
Yeah, it really is, like, what it has to come down to. Who's going to heat up at the right moment? Kind of pivoting away from, like, one trash Toronto team to a good... Because these Toronto teams cannot all be good at once, it feels like. But the Raptors are hot, and they're good. And they're going to be in the playoff team this year. They just beat a really good Thunder team. And
just lost to the Knicks.
The Knicks are a good team too, but still, like, they beat a they beat that, yeah. Like, what, at the start of the season, everyone's thinking, yeah, that 73-win Golden State team, this is the year they're going to get beat. And no, because the Raptors gave them the 10th loss. But, like, what are we thinking about this Raptors team?
Love the Raptors. They're not making a deep playoff push. I said this last time I was on. The best that's going to... They need to go out and get a center. That's what they need really badly. I've seen a lot of trade talks with Domantas Sabonis, who would be a nice addition. Giannis has unofficially asked out of Milwaukee. He's been tied to Toronto previously. He would be a good addition. A little bit of hoping there. But I think, I know Emmanuel Quickley was just named player of the week for the Eastern Conference, but get rid of him. He's just not consistent, and that's what the Raptors need right now. They need a guy who's going to go out there, play good defense, and he's going to be able to give you 20 points a night. The problem with Quickley is he might give you 30 or 40 points one night. The next night he's going to give you 5. And he's just going to let guys blow past him, and it's just not – he doesn't play good basketball.
Yeah, like, you – like, for a lot of things, especially in the NBA, like, for a league that feels very top-heavy, like, there's, like, one or two good teams in the NBA. Like, you really want – like, maybe 3 or 4, actually. Like, it's – there's a lot more bad than good in the NBA. And I feel like the Raptors could make a very – like – I haven't watched as much Raptors as I would like to watch this season, especially because they're good now. But if they stay consistent, they'd get big because they're not the biggest team. They don't have that marquee center. They need that, especially for playoff basketball. You need something like that.
Mm.
But I don't know. Like, something about them, like, the Jays, no one thought the Jays were going to make a deep run, but here we are. Like, the Jays made a deep run. It's... Might not be their year this year, but they're definitely building towards something better.
Yeah.
For sure. Like, they're not going to beat a Thunder. They're not going to be a... I don't even think they're going to beat a Celtics in the playoffs. Maybe, but they're a second-round exit, probably.
Yeah, realistically, if things just go very well, I could see them making the Eastern Conference Finals, but I think it would be a quick exit for them at that point. I don't think we're going to be seeing a very deep run for them. But they're right there. They're a couple big moves, or maybe even just one big move, away from making that deep run. And it sucks that Masai Ujiri's gone. He was the guy. He laid all the foundational pieces for that 2019 run. And seeing him gone last season was the most ridiculous move that MLSE could have made. But I'm still hopeful for what they can get done here.
Yeah, it's just like MLSE cutbacks, which is like, why is MLSE cutting back? At least we have someone here that can, you know, openly talk about MLSE other than like our old friend Mateo. he loves MLSE. What an MLSE guy that is. But I really do think it's the Pistons out of the East. It's just they're really good. And the West is just a cluster. Like, there's way more.
Six teams that you could name in the West.
The Raptors are so lucky they're not in the West.
Yeah.
The West is really good. And I don't know, man. I feel like, is it the Raptors' year? I just have a feeling. It's deep down inside of me. And you can see it in the look on my face. I think the Raptors can make a run. Like, they need some pixie dust. They need some magic.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've seen crazier things happen. But, you know, it's a better year than what we've expected. And they're taking the right steps forward. So whatever comes out of the playoffs comes, really.
Yeah, I think a big part of this was Scottie Barnes took a massive leap forward this year, especially on defense. A lot of people have been calling for him to be Defensive Player of the Year. I can't say they're too wrong. He leads the league in stocks right now, in steals and blocks. He's just been everywhere on the floor. There's not really been, like, even when the ball's not going in for him on offense, he's still locked in on defense, and he provides a lot of value. And a guy like that leading your defense, it's going to start to infect everyone on the team, and it has. You can see it. Even Brandon Ingram, who has not been known for his stellar defense in the past, has been playing very well. But I'm just hopeful that we can get, like, a DeMontis Sabonis or even a Steven Adams, if he could get healthy. Just someone like that to kind of lead that center position going into the playoffs, which is just what the Raptors need.
Yeah, they need that big move, the big free agency. Yeah, maybe free agency next season could be a place if you don't think that this is the year. Kind of speaking of free agency, you seemed pretty angry in my DMs when I invited you on the show. You had one team that you really want to talk about, the Los Angeles Dodgers. You think they're ruining baseball, making too many big moves. Yes, the Tucker deal is outrageous, $60 million a year. Like, MLB free agency, it's kind of over now. There's not many big names on the market. What are you thinking about, you know, what just happened? It's especially last week. I'm so happy we delayed the episode 1 week because of the snow, because everything happened last week. So, like, what are you feeling about free agency?
The Dodgers, something needs to be done here. There's going to be a lockout next season for sure. There's no way there isn't. The MLB needs to implement a salary cap and a salary floor, because you have owners that are spending like $30 million a year and just giving their fans nothing to cheer for, like the Pirates. Like, all they have is Paul Skeens. Like,
not for long. They won't have Paul Skeens for long.
He's going to be a Dodger in a couple seasons. But, like, the owners just don't care. They just want to make as much money as they can, so they spend as little money as they can. Which sucks if you're a fan of those teams. And then you also have teams like the Dodgers, who are willing to either pay a guy $60 million a year when he shouldn't be getting $60 million a year, or they're going to be giving you $1 billion in 40 years through deferred contracts, which is, the fact that that's even allowed is just insane.
Yeah, like, here's the thing about the Dodgers. I don't think they're ruining baseball. What they're doing is actually good for baseball, because spending a lot of money on a lot of players, it's inherently it's not good for the players. It's not good for the competition. But here's the thing: the Dodgers, everyone said they're going to ruin baseball. You got to think, last year they're in the wild card round. They were playing in the wild card against the Reds. They weren't one of the best regular season teams. They had flaws. The Jays were two outs away from beating them in the World Series, and the Jays are a team with a decently high salary cap, with a decently high payroll, but, like, a lockout in baseball for the worst thing it for baseball, because you're coming off of, like, baseball's getting more popular now. We're talking about, like, it's not like 2010s baseball, which was no one was watching, because I'm a baseball guy, and it was, I can agree, it was boring to watch, but, like, with the pitch clock, and it's finally hitting a stride now where people are actually coming to the games, they're watching it on TV. A lockout would be horrible. But, yeah, maybe something has to be done about Dodgers spending, but these owners aren't poor. These are billionaires. Like, these guys own billion-dollar assets. These teams are worth, like, even the Rays, who are worth nothing, MLB standards, are a billion-dollar team. So they're not hurting for money. And it's a bunch of investment groups that they just care about the bottom line. A salary floor would be beneficial, but you can't have a floor without a cap.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, and players don't want a cap. Owners want a cap. And it's going to head towards a lockout, which is super unfortunate for baseball. But I think it's good for the sport. I think it's the big headlines, the big players get big money. It attracts more people to baseball. But it's unfortunate what it does for the competition of the game. And, like, it sucks for the Jays, too, because how many times have they been, like, second place to a big player?
Yankees, every time. They just kind of swooped in. Like, there were so many guys. I know we were in the Juan Soto talks the other year before he went to the Mets. Bo Bichette just happened. Kyle Tucker just happened. Shohei Ohtani, obviously. Shohei Ohtani has boarded a private jet headed to Toronto. But just consistently, we've always been in talks for these big names. And then one of these teams that just has even more money than Rogers does swoops in and is like, hey, we'll actually give you $50 million more dollars than you really deserve just to come play for us. And, of course, they take it.
Yeah, like, even speaking to, like, the Mets, I have no clue what the Mets are doing. I have zero. Like, Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, he came out and he said, we might scale back on the spending. Like, we've been spending way too much. Might be, like, you know, maybe chill out. And then his chill out was give Bo Bichette $42 million a year. Like, Bo Bichette, he's a good player. Like, there's five tools in baseball. There's hitting for average, power, hitting for power, speed, fielding, and arm strength. Bo Bichette really has, like, one and a half of those tools that he does well, and that's hitting for average, and he hits for power occasionally. Like, he's not the, like,
he has some good moments.
He has some, like, but he's not, like, the big home run. He's not Guerrero power. Like, no. We know that. And, like, you give a guy that does, he's absolute negative value defensively, and he might be worse at base running. You give that guy $42 million a year to go pair with your other guy that's really good at hitting for average, but he's better at hitting for power, Juan Soto,
yeah,
but also can't play defense, can't base run, or he has a weak arm too.
Yeah, and there were reports coming out of Bo Bichette playing third for the Mets, which, for a guy who really can't throw from shortstop, now you've put him in third and you want him to throw all the way across the infield, that's not a good look.
Like, his arm strength isn't the worst. It's not like he has a total noodle. But he only throws about, like their 40th percentile arm strength in the MLB.
Yeah.
For a third baseman, like, as a guy who played the position his entire life, like, 82 miles an hour is, like, worse than university level, like, arm strength. You cannot be throwing 82 miles an hour in the MLB as a third baseman. But, I don't know, I feel like for his glove it might be beneficial, because third is an easier position than shortstop to play, but he is playing out of position. That's the one major concern for the Mets. But the way the Mets are building their team right now, they don't care about defense. They're going to score 12 runs a game, but they don't care if they get up 11. If they score more, they don't care.
Yeah, they just have to go. I feel like they're probably going to be making some big trades for some better pitching. Their rotation's all right, but for the defense that they have, you don't want your pitchers to be relying on those guys. Those guys aren't going to be getting you outs in those clutch situations. You need a guy who's going to make batters miss or make just horrible contact, and they don't really have guys like that right now.
I mean, like, they just traded for Freddy Peralta. Like, that's a good trade. I feel like they kind of overpaid for Peralta, but, like, Freddy Peralta is an elite pitcher. That's your 2.70 ERA guy. That's keeping the head of your staff. But, like, there's so much just been happening this offseason. Like, I was talking, like, I had Frankie and Owen on the podcast last week, and Frankie forgot that Edwin Diaz is a Dodger. Like, it's just been, there's so much happening, and like there's still people on the market. Like Luis Arraez is still a free agent. The Jays could get a guy like that. Like Luis Arraez is a slightly worse Bo Bichette, if you really think about it. Guy who can hit for average, can't play defense, is slow, doesn't really hit for power. Like, it could be a fit. I don't think the Jays really need a middle infielder, especially you have Arjun Namala in the system. Yeah. Jojo Parker's in the system. The pitching should be really good this season. Dylan Cease, Gallo Heisman skills still around. Hopefully Brios can bounce back. Trey Savage is still him. Randy Keedman hopefully can be healthy, come up. Like, that guy can throw 100, but then he blows his UCL out. So
yeah.
I'm excited for the Jays. I'm hoping last season wasn't smoke and mirrors, really. That's what all I'm really hoping for, because I was at a lot of Jays games early in the season. It was not fun.
I managed to go to the ALCS finals.
Were you in game seven?
I was at game seven when Springer hit that home run.
I was at game one when Springer, I called the Springer first pitch home run, game one. I was with my buddy and there's two guys in front of us. I'm like, yo, Springer's gonna hit a bomb here. He sends it. And then that was the last run he scored all game. And I paid a lot of money for that game.
it was a fun game to be at. But how do you feel about Arjun Namala as a prospect? Do you think he's gonna be it, or like what are we looking at there?
I think he's really solid, but the pick of Jojo Parker, that's, if I'm Arjun Namala, I'm not sure how I feel about that. It's not bad to have a lot of shortstops. Shortstops are like it's the most versatile position in baseball. You can play the entire infield if you play short. But like, I feel good about Namala. I feel good about Parker. I feel like the team for the future is in a really good spot, but one of those two players can be used as trade chips, if you really think about it. Like, those are blue chip prospects. Those are guys that a lot of teams would want, especially because they play a premier position in shortstop and they play it well and they can hit. That's the future of the Jays, especially because I don't think Andrés Giménez is the future for the middle infield. Ernie Clement, he's good. He's a really good hitter, but
he got really hot in the playoffs. I don't know if he can sustain that.
I don't think he's sustainable, especially against like right-handed pitching. He's not the best hitter.
Yeah.
And the Jays have a lot of guys that feel very similar to me, like Ernie Clement, Andrés Giménez, Miles Straw, like guys that are really good defensively, but they have the most, like even Nathan Lucas, but just the most hot and cold bats.
Yeah.
And they can hit for average, but they're not the best power hitters. The Jays just lack power, like outside of Guerrero and hopefully Anthony Santander this season.
How did you feel about all the Kirk Award stubs?
Like, I don't understand. Here's the thing. There's one better defensive catcher, and I believe it's Patrick Bailey in San Francisco.
Yeah.
But, like, the fact that he didn't win nothing, like, he's a 300-hitting catcher that's, like, I understand he's not the fastest, guys. He doesn't look like, if you don't watch Jays games, like, how is this guy in the MLB? But, like, still, like, I was shocked that him and Ernie Clement didn't win. Like, it felt like they won nothing. Like, the Jays should have, like, walked into the awards ceremony, cleaned house, and walked out. And it was just empty. We had nothing.
Yeah. I was so surprised that he didn't. He was so good defensively. And besides from that last play in the World Series. But he was incredible batting as well. He had some big moments. He was able to make good contact on the ball. He was just good all around, and I don't understand what it was that just didn't draw any votes.
I have no clue, dude. It might be something that he's just like the way he looks. Like, I feel like that turns some voters off. Like, Bill Belichick didn't make the Hall of Fame. Like, there's something wrong with the voters this year.
Yeah.
Like, that was like just a move into NFL, because it's Super Bowl weekend very soon. We just finished a conference game. My Broncos are out. Like, dude, like,
that was a rough game.
Oh my. Like, I knew once we like didn't kick the field goal, we were cooked. And then once I saw Jared Stidham himself in our own red zone, I was like, oh no. Like, I thought Stidham was gonna fold his way to the Super Bowl. I'd bought onto it, dude. I was on the copium. I was on the hope train. It was like, yep, Jared Stidham's my Nick Foles. And then we were gonna have this whole quarterback controversy with Bo Nix and Jared Stidham. No, Jared Stidham's garbage. The Patriots are not a good team. Like, I feel like the Seahawks are going to drop 45 on them.
So happy I'm a Seahawks fan.
Yeah, screw you, dude. Genuinely, I hate this. I hate the Super Bowl so much. It's like my outside of the Chiefs, there's few teams I hate other than the Seahawks and Patriots. It is like, God, I just like this Super Bowl is gonna be so hard to watch. It's the Patriots. Like, they haven't played a good offense the entire playoffs.
I hate the Patriots so much. So hopefully we can get a little bit of revenge after that goal line incident a couple years ago.
You know, you have Kenneth Walker this time, said Marshawn Lynch. You think you're going
to run the ball, please?
I could see it coming down to that. Like, just, yeah, you have the ball in the two. Do you give it to Kenneth Walker? Do you let Sam Darnold throw it? It gets picked off. He's trying to target.
Just run the ball, please. I think a big moment from that moment in the Super Bowl that year, they had run the ball before that and didn't get anything. And obviously throwing wasn't the right move, but I feel like too many people get lost in that moment where it's Marshawn Lynch, you're at the goal line, run the ball. But they had tried previously in the game and earlier, I think in the same downs, didn't work. So try something different.
Yeah, like you see a lot of clips of this, especially with the Super Bowl matchup being Patriots Seahawks. Like, I saw an angle of him, like, it's not a bad play call for you to think about it. Like, Russ just put that ball high and out. Yeah. Like, if he puts that ball low and in, like, to the receiver's hip, I think the Seahawks win that Super Bowl. And we kind of forget about it. Like, they had the most circus play to even get down there. Just chuck it up. That, like, double bounced off, like, everybody and lands into the Seahawks receiver hands. And it's just, you really think after a moment like that, you walk away with the Super Bowl win, especially after what they did to the Broncos the previous year in the Super Bowl. At least we forget. Like, it's just, it should be the Seahawks time. This should be the ultimate Sam Darnold, like, arc. Like,
yeah. This is full circle for him.
This is the most full, like, 14, like, he goes, was horrible with the Jets. Then he goes to the Panthers with Baker Mayfield. Then he goes over to Minnesota, has a resurgence year.
Don't forget the Niners.
Oh, yeah. He's been to more Super Bowls than Aaron Rodgers has. Like, I saw that today. I'm like, that's crazy. Yep. Sam Darnold's been the more. And then he goes to the. When he came to the Seahawks, I thought the Seahawks were cooked. I mean, so genuine. I didn't think Sam Darnold was good, but the Seahawks are really good. Mike McDonald's really good.
Yeah.
The Seahawks surprised, I think, everyone this season.
They surprised me even as a Seahawks fan. I had a feeling we'd be doing good. Not this good. I had faith in Sam Darnold. He had a lot of really good moments in Minnesota, and replacing him with 9 was an interesting move. To be nice.
Hey, man, like, he's got the ultimate ego. You hear that from the guy, like, I gotta give that guy a chance. But, like, I think because the Vikings got worse over the offseason. Niners, I don't know the Niners. Like, the Seahawks, I saw them. I'm like, this is a really good division they're in. And I didn't know much if Sam Darnold was going to be good or not. And Jackson, like, JSN's really good.
Yeah.
Cooper Kupp's really good. The running back room is really good. Everything's just good about the Seahawks. Like, I can't point to a weakness, really, other than Sam Darnold is a bit of a choker. He sees ghosts sometimes.
Yeah. And as long as Tariq Woolen doesn't start yelling at the sideline again, we'll be good.
I thought they were I hate how that game ended. Tariq Woolen, I was so Rams. I was pro Rams in that game. I know you're going to hate me for that, but I was so pro Rams in that game. And then I thought Stafford was going to go and drive down with 20 seconds left. I was holding
on to my seat. I was like, please don't tell me he does it.
Dude, when Puka caught that, and I thought he was out of bounds, I'm like, oh my God, the Rams are going to win in a Hail Mary. I genuinely thought that, and then I saw him out of bounds. And I'm like, he's going to go another rampage on the refs, isn't he? Because it's Puka Nacua. But I think I know who your Super Bowl pick is.
Have to go Seahawks.
Like, it's hard to bet against the Seahawks, especially against a team, the Patriots, that have played a kiddie coaster regular season. Like, they play Justin Herbert in the playoffs. Justin Herbert has an offensive line, no weapons, and he has a broken wrist. Then he played probably the worst quarterback in the playoffs. And CJ throw two more picks, Stroud. Then he played Jarrett Stidham in the snow.
Yeah.
And his only touchdown was when Jarrett Stidham Stidhamed himself in his own red zone, which is going to haunt me. Because if Bo Nix plays that game, I think we win handily. But, you know, there's all these hypotheticals, Sean Payton hypotheticals, if it was pass interference, if it was this.
I'll give you guys this. I don't think it was pass interference. But it's just like Bo Nix going down second last play of the game in overtime.
Dude, I was calling a hockey game, hockey game during like when the whole game was happening against the Bills. I'm like during periods, I'm checking my phone, and then I see we win, going to overtime against Lakehead, and then we won, great. So I called the Lakehead. Lakehead beats us in overtime, and then I go check my phone. My phone's exploding. I'm like, oh no. Like all my, like, you know, your friends just hate watch your team. Yeah. I go check and my boy, he texts me. He's like, yo, check the news. I'm like, what happened? He's like, Bo Nix is out for the season. I'm like, you're lying to me. There's like no way we could, he played the rest of the game. No, he's out for the season. Like pain. And I was devastated, dude. I almost fell to my knees in the rec center.
Yeah, that was, I'm not the biggest fan of the Broncos, but I love, PS2. He's fun to watch. But I think Bo Nix coming back next season, I think this was a really good learning moment for this whole team, kind of making a nice little run in the playoffs. I think they can get it done next year as long as they keep those key pieces around. They're just good.
Yeah, like they cleared out the OC after that game and – like the offense needed a retool. They need a number one something. They need like J.K. Dobbins was good, but like they need a one receiver. Like I love Cortland Sutton. I love Pat Bryan, Troy Franklin, Marvin Mims. But that's just a bunch of number twos on a team that needs a one. And I wouldn't be against getting Jefferson. That's going to be a costly move, but
it's a good move.
It's a move you might need to consider. Especially if you're a team that the contending window is wide open, you have a rookie quarterback contract.
Yeah,
the Russ deal is finally off the books. You got a lot of money, you got a lot of capital. Go make a move, and you know, I think the Broncos are poised to do something next season. But this year was our year. I felt it. Seahawks got lucky. Oh man, Seahawks are gonna win the bowl.
We got lucky when how badly did we beat the Niners in that game?
My buddy's I got a story about that Seahawks game. So my buddy's a Niners fan, and I think I was coming back from another game, like a different hockey game. I was busy that weekend. And I go check. He's on a call with his other friend. I'm like, yo, let me hop in, because he has a Niners game streaming and they're watching it together. I checked the score. It's like 30-6. I'm like, dude, what happened? It's like, oh no. But yeah, like I can't say it enough. Seahawks don't win at all unless Sam Darnold shows up. Like that Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
But I think other than the Olympics, it's coming up soon. There's really just one thing we're all looking for. It's the hockey. I think it's Canada, United States, Sweden, Finland. They look like a bronze medal game waiting to happen.
How are you feeling about the Olympic rink?
The Milano one?
Yeah.
It's certainly a rink. It's definitely something I've seen. Like I was up in like Elmira a few nights ago or a week ago. Which is like 30 minutes up, whatever here. And yeah, that rink looked nicer than the one in Milan.
Yeah.
It's just, you had 4 years to figure this one out, guys. And you have like million-dollar athletes showing up to your doorstep.
At this point, just take one of those soccer stadiums, stick some water in it, freeze it, and just call it a day. Because it's going to be better than what they have at this point.
The neutral zone's disgusting. Like McDavid is going to fly through that. He's going to burn the slow American defenders like all night long. And it's going to be fun to watch, especially because the rink's smaller now. Like, well, I don't know who benefits. I genuinely do not know who this benefits, because it's, hey, we don't want Olympic sheet, which is bigger. So Milan was like, yeah, we're going to give you a U13 rink.
Yeah, I just don't get how they've spent so much money this Olympics. They've had so many years. Because really, they've had more than 4 years to get through this. Because they put in their bid in, like, 2014.
Yeah, and, like, there's been rumors that, like, hey, you're probably going to have to build an NHL rink. Because, this is the year they've been targeting for a while now to get Olympians in here. Especially post-pandemic. Like, Olympic NHL players. And you've had a lot of time. But it's like, hey, we don't have a rink. And it's, like, December of last year. And I'm like, what do you mean we don't have a rink? You have Connor McDavid showing up in Italy in a few months. Like, get it done.
Yeah, like, honestly, I think it's going to hinder McDavid more because the rink's so much smaller. Those defenders are going to be so crowded, and it's going to be hard to kind of burst through them compared to when he has all that open ice on a regular-sized rink.
Yeah, and I feel like the Canadian like roster construction, it reflects that really well.
Yeah.
Because guys like Bedard got left off, but Bedard can't play defense. Like, it's a bunch of guys that are two-way forwards that are really good defensively. They're, like, all playmakers. Like, we don't have a purebred sniper on this team. Like, McDavid can score, McKinnon can score, but these are, like, playmakers at heart.
Yeah.
And it's just a bunch of those guys. Like, Drew Doughty's on the squad. What is Drew Doughty doing? Like, I thought Drew Doughty should have been retired by now.
Drew Doughty should have retired in 2020. I don't know how he's still playing hockey.
Like, he always shows up and, like, hey, it's a small rink. It should benefit a guy who has the experience, to, like, a bunch of Olympic experience like Drew Doughty does. But I'm not sure how I feel about the, like, the American United States teams. They left a lot more talent off.
Yeah.
Like, Caulfield, I know you might be angry about that, left off the United States team.
I don't get that.
Jason, I don't understand Jason Robertson.
That one also made no sense.
It's just a lot of talent being left off the Olympic rosters, but hey, it's whoever they think is the best scheme fit.
Just to watch Brady Tkachuk.
Hey, Brady Tkachuk reportedly can count to 10 now, so like, let's chill on the Tkachuk. I love the Tkachuk brothers, especially when they get together. I feel like at some point in their career, they need to play together, like on an NHL team. I really hope. They're, especially in the Four Nations, those guys are entertaining.
No, they're definitely fun to watch. They're good hockey players. They're physical. I think they play hockey the right way at this point. They have a lot of speed. Matthew's very creative with the puck. He's able to do pretty much whatever he wants with it at any moment. But they play physical hockey, and they can get it done when it has to. They just are a little bit stupid.
Hey, like, sometimes, like, there's not a sharp hockey player, like, other than really Crosby. Like, there's not like, a guy who's, gonna, like, who's, like, maybe Matthew and Brady are not this, you know?
Like, kind of, like, a little bit down here.
Especially Brady. Like, Brady looks stupid. Brady just looks stupid. But, like, I don't know. Like, they're really entertaining to watch. They play the game the right way. They're both leaders. There's a reason they're both, like, locker room guys, leaders. Yeah. They wear C's and A's wherever they go. Like, I would like to see it, like, a line. Like, I wish Brady came to Florida and played with, like, Marchand to Chuck. That'd be disgusting.
Don't give Florida more championships. We don't need to see this.
I don't know. I love the way Florida plays hockey, especially in the playoffs, because they are just, they piss
They're
off. They piss everyone off. I love when they just piss Toronto fans off.
It's a lot like the old Bruins teams.
And it's just, yeah, much of those hard nose, like, even like the Kings, like how they used to play in their heyday. But the Olympics should be fun. Like, it's 2026 is a golden year for sports. Like, World Cup, there's no need to talk for that now. Like, we don't have, like, the full qualifiers, and we're probably both a bit of, like, Italy's not qualified yet. I'm not talking until Italy gets, if Italy gets eliminated, I will have a 35-minute rant. It'll be me, Frankie, and, like, if I find another, like, really passionate Italian guy, he'll be sitting right here, and we're going to be screaming at the mics for, like, 40 minutes. But It's gonna be a really good year for sports.
So, if Italy qualifies, Canada versus Italy, who are you going for?
It's conflict of interest, really. go Blue Jays for that. Let's go Jays. The Jays are playing the Yankees that day. Yeah, it'll be a conflict of interest. I don't know, whoever wins, I'll be like, if Italy goes down, you know, I'll both jerseys on. I'll have the Canadian hockey jersey on top of the Italy jersey.
You'll be like the Kelsey's mom when she had both of the jerseys sewn up together on each side.
Oh, that might be me. That might be a lot of people, especially New Yorkers that come up for that game. That's gonna be a lot of people that are like that. A lot of North York folks, Vaughan, Woodbridge people. I mean, a lot of like people
like half
that.
Of Toronto.
Dude, Little Italy's gonna crumble. Little Italy's gonna crumble. But yeah, like 2026, it should be a really interesting year. A lot of good things for Toronto sports, other than the Leafs, Olympics, World Cup. It's just, yeah, like it's probably going to, like 2025 was a really good year for sports, entertainment-wise.
2026 is going to be better.
I think so. I really do think so. But like, I think that really does it for us this week. Thank you, Tanner. You've been outstanding, man. We love rambling about the Leafs. But, you know, I think that does it for the second episode of 2026 for us. And thank you, everyone. Thank you, old Golden Hawks, for listening to this episode of Golden Bold. Beauty.
That was good.
Oh, man.
Oh. It's going to be so sad if Italy doesn't qualify.
Dude, I might...
I don't like 50.